Hey guys, Trapper here.
And Emily.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Traps Lodge. If you like it, leave us a review.
Welcome everybody back to Traps Lodge.
Hey guys, welcome to episode
three
of Traps Lodge. We did one intro and a couple Alaska tips and tongue-tied. Tip, tricks, and what to prepare for and maybe what to expect weather-wise. I said a lot in that last one. I'm going to try not to do that this much. I just caught myself. So we want to prepare you guys for the upcoming season.
Yes. Topic of this podcast is preparing for hunting season.
And we're a little bit late because there's already been some seasons that have opened up. Antelope seasons in New Mexico, antelope seasons, I think, in Nevada. Archery season in Wyoming's coming up for antelope. I think it opens up September 1. Being from Texas, our bow hunting season opens up first part of October. General rifle is first weekend in November. And we want to go over some thoughts about how to prepare. And I'm just coming to you from my experience when I get clients, hunters, guests, brother-in-laws in to hunting camp and adjustments we have to make on the fly because preparations weren't made.
Perfect. So let's start at the very basic. Season's almost here. What's the most basic thing that every hunter needs to do?
Practice. I get a lot of guys that are come to me with rifle mostly. And say, well, it was on last season when I put it in a safe and they haven't shot it since. And I don't let anybody go hunting with me until we check the rifle. And then they promise me and guarantee me that old Betsy's just as right as gold. And that's why I have such good tracking dogs, because of those scenarios. If you're a bow hunter, you need to practice in multiple different scenarios, tree stand, pop up, kneeling, sitting, standing. Broadheads fly different than field points. I've learned that on a couple of different occasions. Guys will be zeroed in with their field points, go hunting with a broadhead, and it throws it down and left or down and right. Something odd with that, the way the flight pattern is. I'm not an avid bow hunter. I've guided and been around enough bow hunters to gather a lot of information and a lot of mess ups. And again, that's why I have great tracking dogs, because of bow hunting, 6.5 Creedmoors, and yes, my rifle's on.
Okay, so practice. That's your number one piece of advice for everyone gearing up. What do they need to do gear wise? What kind of gear do they have? How do they need to prep it?
It's as simple from head to toe. Sorry, did I cut you off again?
Yes.
Go okay. Ahead.
No, I just was going to say, do they need to go out and buy new stuff? Will things they have work? Just kind of elaborate on preparing on the gear side of things.
I think it all depends on your situation. And I've seen guys kill giant deer in a blue jean jacket or a plaid coat or in a pickup or whatever. I think hunting's probably 80% luck and 10% of just being in the right spot at the right time, putting yourself out there, kind of like dating, right? You got to put yourself out on the market. Just joking. And then quite a bit of prep and knowledge. And when I say check your gear, are your hunting boots, are the soles falling off? Are the straps coming undone? Is your hunting buggy all checked out? You need new tires? Need new brakes? Need the oil changed? Is your pickup got in good shape? Your corn feeders in good shape? Make sure your tree stands, if you're in a tree stand, that the straps haven't gotten dry rotted over the spring and summer. You don't want to be crawling up a tree stand and it break loose from the tree and fall. Checking everything to prepare yourself for opening day.
All right. So far we've got practice and checking our gear. What's next on the list?
Well, checking your gear, also checking your rifle, going to the range. We kind of covered that briefly in the beginning, checking your bow. A lot of technology has come out with game cameras, and a lot of guys put out these game cameras through the spring and summer, early fall, patterning deer. And a lot of game cameras shoot those images right to your phone. So you spend a lot less time going into the woods and pulling out those cards, which is a huge convenience, but you're spending less time in that area. So like when you go fill your feeders or check your stand, I think the more your scent is in that area, the better off you are. I'm sure a lot of people will argue that you need to stay out of that area and use all these scent blockers and scent lockers and hope for the best on opening day. I believe the contrary, that I'll take a piss on the trail, take a piss near my deer feeder, spit tobacco on the ground, put my sweaty shirt in the bow blind if I'm a bow hunter, acclimate those deer to my scent. They don't know it's a human scent. It's just a different scent. So anything that changes differently from their daily routine to opening morning, will throw a wrench in it. So
yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, they have their routine, and then the second something in there that's abnormal will cause them to alter that routine. So definitely, hopefully most of the listeners have somewhere that they can hunt, either their own land or a lease. But let's say that they're booking a hunt with a guide like yourself or with a certain ranch. What type of questions do they need to ask to be as fully prepared as they can for going somewhere that's not theirs, you know, they've never been before?
It's funny you say that, because when I initially talk to a hunter, I initially get a phone call. That phone call's 5, 10, 15 minutes long. As soon as I hang up the phone, I start getting text messages of questions they forgot to ask during the conversation. And so booking a hunt actually takes a lot of man hours and time. As you well know, I'm on my phone till all wee hours of the night. You need to ask a lot of things. What can I expect? How will I be hunting? Stand hunting, safari style, walking stock? You know, what's the acreage? Are the deer on a feeding pattern?
I'm sorry to interrupt, but for those that don't know, what's safari style if they're brand new to hunting?
So safari style for us in Texas is basically driving around and either spotting from the vehicle and stalking it, or spotting and shooting from the vehicle.
Okay.
What caliber do I bring is my probably number one question. And depending on what their species they're hunting, whether it be whitetail or elk, mule deer, antelope, they'll rattle off 3 or 4 or 5 different calibers, and they've always got the new gun. You know, I got to bring my new whatever. A lot of times I tell guys, if you open your safe or you go to your gun locker, what's the first gun you grab? What caliber is that one? Your old Betsy, your old trusty. Because the gun that they shoot the most and have the most confidence in is probably the gun I'm going to tell them to bring. Unless it's too light of a caliber for what we're hunting. For example, elk hunting, I don't recommend a 223. In most states, it's not legal. You know, I don't recommend a light 308. I like to do 7 mag, 300 Win mag, and there's a whole array of calibers north of that. Next question. You're dragging now.
No, I'm just trying to think. I feel like we could get so granular on this for people that have never, ever hunted. But that might be for another episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're booking a hunt, you need to know beforehand. As a guide, I ask them if they're taking the meat in the head home with them, or if I need to arrange taxidermy meat processing. Taxidermy meat processing is always an afterthought, and there's always that panic mode of, oh, crap, I didn't bring an ice chest, or I didn't think about it. So know what you're getting into up front. If you're on a hunting lease with your buddies, you check your ice chest, make sure it's in good shape. Make a list of stuff for opening weekend. I've got buddies that show up with 3 action packers full of hunting gear that they'll never even take out of the action packer. But they always forget the one important thing, like a pocket knife or a skinny knife, you know. So make a list, check it twice. It's no different than what we talked about packing for Alaska. Being prepared for whatever hunt you're going on, or fishing trip, or just hiking trip. If you're just hiking, make sure you got plenty of water. Make sure you've got plenty of food. Make sure you've got something if you get stuck out there overnight, or you've got somebody to contact somebody if you break your leg. You think of the worst, prepare for the worst, pray for the best.
All right. So practice, check our gear. We've got some questions to ask if you're a new hunter as far as going to a ranch, what to ask your guide. We've talked a little bit about prepping your area, your feeding ground and stuff, if you're bow hunting or even rifle, whatever kind of hunting you're doing. Let's talk about gear a little bit. What do you like to hunt in?
Most of the time I'm in a t-shirt and Fall Raven pants. And you know that.
Yeah, I do.
And there's so many new gear companies out there. And it's just hard to dissect everything and figure out what really works for everybody. And I mesh a lot of different styles and companies together. I'm not sold solely on one thing or the other. The Sitka system, the Kuyu system, from base layer to outer layer, they are amazing. The research has been done. It's insane how great that stuff works. I mix and match that stuff. They would probably scold me for doing that. At the same turn, there's guys that, again, are in a blue jean jacket or plaid coat, elk hunting or elk guiding, and the guy next to him is head-to-toe camo.
Right. So I think what I've gathered from just talking and having multiple conversations with you about this is go hunting in what you're comfortable in.
Yeah. If you're comfortable and it's what you can afford. I've got guys that show up in the Walmart camo. I've got guys that show up in Carhartt bibs. A lot of times in Texas, you're either in a vehicle or in a blind. You don't need to go buy thousands of dollars worth of camo.
I remember a lady that hunted with you from Alabama, I think, and she was in flip-flops and yoga pants and like a big t-shirt.
Welcome to Texas, honey.
And she shot her first axis, I think.
Yeah.
And she was so excited, and it didn't matter what she was wearing. She had no idea. You know, so I think that's cool. I think that's an important part to new hunters, especially because, you know, it's expensive to enter the hunting world, but it doesn't have to be as expensive as everybody makes.
Maybe it feels a little bit threatening, showing up to camp like that. It's like if you're going to like a black tie dinner and you show up in a t-shirt, like if you show up to hunting camp in your blue jeans and a t-shirt and everybody there's in hardcore camo, you kind of look like the odd guy out.
Yeah, but that's what I love about Traps Lodge is we're here to promote all of that. Show up however you're comfortable. And if your budget, like, for instance, I think of hunting gear just like, you know, women and shopping. Like, it's fun to go shopping for stuff. But if you can't afford it, it's not a big deal. But by all means, if you can afford it and you want to go out and buy head-to-toe camo and cool gadgets and all that, why not? You know, we're not here to judge. I think it's important that everyone just does what they can on their budget, what they enjoy, what will make them comfortable and confident. You know, just like you said, they use their best rifle because that's what they're confident with. And I think that's really all that matters.
I mean, I've had guys show up head to toe camo and paint their face to get into a box blind that has tinted windows.
Yeah, but that's their thing. But you know?
I mean, so they were living large, right? And in the same instance, like flip-flops, yoga pants. I mean, that's Texas hunting. Hunting in different states is different. I've hunted New Mexico in a Carhartt jacket, guided elk hunts there when I was a young man. Didn't even own much camo. And back then, the only camo you could get was Army Surplus stuff that you could actually stop in Roswell at the big Army Surplus store there and just gather it up. They didn't have it. And then Realtree came out.
That's one of the things we talked about when we started Traps Lodge is we really want to be inclusive of everyone. And there doesn't need to be that barrier of...
Yeah, but I also do think, like, when we talk about Alaska, that's a mindset that you need to really look at your gear.
Right.
Because you're talking about a totally different type of scenario. You're not in a pickup or in a dry, you know, box blind or anything like that. Like, I'd highly recommend the best your gear you can afford.
Right. And you said it perfectly. Welcome to Texas hunting, right? When we're talking about the blue jeans or the flip-flops. So it just depends on where you're at, but definitely. So a question that I know you get asked a lot, once again, going back to the guys that are going to be booking hunts and things like that, is tipping.
And that's a big one. Yeah.
And I feel like people you know, it's the money talk. No one wants to talk about it. But how do you tip? What's
so a lot of my clients come to me because I'm usually the head guide, or at least in Texas, or I conducted the hunt, and people just don't know. They don't know. They don't understand it. Sometimes they can be insulting when they give a tip and they think it's a decent amount of money, and the guide gets insulted because he's like, man, I'm busting my butt for you for like 3 or 4 days. I mean, you gave me $20. Generally speaking, it's 10 to 15% of your hunt.
Of just the
of the entire, whatever you spent on that hunt, it should be 10 to 15%. But take into effect, if there was a head, like say a guide and a packer, or a guide and a skinner, you know, a guy in a butcher house, and then a cook or two cooks, it can get confusing, you know. And I've had the cook get paid, make $100, and then the guide gets $500, and the skinner gets maybe $100. What I've done with my crew is I take whatever guide money, tip money from the weekend, put it in a pile, and I divide it evenly across my crew. Because I don't feel like anyone's job is more important than the other. Because if the guide's guiding the guy to get the animal harvested, brings it to the butcher house, that guy's busting his butt so that guy can go back out and go hunting again. And meanwhile, the cook's hours, they're not any shorter. She or he is up before daylight, first one in, actually in camp awake, and feeds everybody. So 10 to 15%. On a a $5,000 hunt, $500, but you might spread that across the board. $200 here, $300 for the, you know, guide, or $200 for him, $200 for the skinner, or $200 for the cook. If it's $600, you know, try to divide it up evenly. Most of the time, the guide gets tipped heavier because they feel like he did most of the work. But that's what they see every day. They don't see the behind the scenes, what goes on every day, how much work the cook's got to put into it. And sometimes being the guide, you're the guide, the cook, and the skinner. You know, just every situation is different. It's a big question.
So that's a good fact for first time hunters or people that have never gone to a ranch and hunted, so they can budget for it. You know, I think that's important, knowing how much to spend, because a lot of the times tips or things like that can come as a surprise. So I think that's good knowledge for them.
So, yeah. Another surprise is like the taxidermy, what it costs, the meat processing, what it costs, the tip, what it costs. Those are all things you need to research and find out beforehand. If you're saving up for a hunt and you say, man, I booked this $3,500 hunt, that's not the end of the line.
Right.
I mean, all of a sudden you've got a $400 or $500 tip on top of that. You've got fuel, you've got meat processing, which is $150-$200. You got a taxidermy mount, shoulder mount, $500 to $700. All of a sudden the wife says, that hunting trip was $5,000, not $3,500.
Yeah. So just being prepared and knowing and asking the right questions, I think, so that it's important that you know all that ahead of time so you can budget for it and then go and just really enjoy your trip and not have anything unexpected.
At least you know up front what you're spending. Right. So not being surprised is going to be helpful.
Yes.
And make it more enjoyable. Right. So like if you're booking a hunt, you need to ask, what's all this include? Because some places, they think they're spending X, and then they go to checkout and there's a bunch of line items. They charge them for liquor, they charge them for beer, they charge them for a soda water, they charge them for a guide, they charge them for lodging, they charge them for skinning, they charge them for transportation. All of a sudden, they have all these little tiny line items that add another $1,000, $1,500 on their hunt. So you need to find out what the bottom line is so you can budget for that hunt. Unless you just don't care what it costs, if you're a Kardashian, then, you know, great. Not that I've ever watched that show.
I was just going to say, that's quite the reference for you.
Name drop.
All right. So most important thing gearing up for the season, we've got practice. Practice like you're going to play, sitting position, standing in the blind.
Shooting. Yeah.
Shooting, all of that. Check your gear. Make sure it's prepped and ready to go. Make sure you're not just pulling it out the day that you're going to the lease. If you can, get into your feeding area beforehand. Get your scent there, make the deer familiar with you. We've got a bunch of questions that you can ask when booking a hunt, guides on tipping and fees and that sort of thing. So let's wrap up and give the listeners some final thoughts for getting ready for hunting season.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, the important part, right? The
important part's that you do all this to enjoy it. It shouldn't be all work. You do it to enjoy it. Also take into effect that it's not always about killing something. It's about the camaraderie, or even if you're alone, or the campfire, or just about enjoying the outdoors and introducing your kids, your friends into the outdoors, into hunting. And I've seen a big trend on social media of naysayers, like the negative Nancys, where I feel like outdoorsmen should all be on the same team, because they're not everywhere. We're just not a big group of people. I think the hunting world's a small world. I don't care if it's high fence, low fence, little buck, big buck, protein fed, not protein fed. You kill it on a corn feeder. Well, you're sitting on a cornfield. Like, why are we arguing amongst each other? We should all be supportive. We should all be supportive of each other. We should be supportive of our bird hunters, our fishermen, our bow hunters, our rifle hunters. We're all the same people, and we're all like-minded people. And if you can't afford it, don't bring down the guy that busted his ass to pay for a big hunt and be happy with what you've got. And the guy that can't afford the big hunt, don't make fun of the little guy that, man, he's happy with that little 120-inch 8-point. We're all on the same team.
Yeah, and we all enjoy the same – we're all enjoying the same profession, same industry. We need to lift each other up and just – like you said, enjoy it. We're all on the same team. All right. Well, we want to wish everybody a great season this year. And once again, if you have any feedback or questions, reach out to us.
Yeah, guys, good luck. Be safe.
Have fun.
Have fun. Try to learn. I learn every day. I've been in the field my entire life, and I never stop learning and absorbing just information. Learn from the wildlife. Learn from the deer. If all you see is a squirrel that morning, guess what? The boss wasn't yelling at you, and the phone wasn't ringing. So just enjoy that moment too. So good luck out there. Hey guys, thanks for listening to Traps Lodge. Leave us a review, send us an email. Till next time.